Shire, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys? A little confluence of the minds here at 3 o'clock as we both hop on at the same time, Robin.
Yeah, like, I'm good.
It's like Huey, Dewey, and Louie all together now. It's great.
Great minds think alike, man.
Yeah.
The New York Rangers, Washington Capitals, very close series.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't even know afterwards if I can say that the Rangers are the better team.
Well, Washington certainly answered some questions and I think took a real positive step forward as an organization this year. I mean, they ran smack dab into a real good goaltender and a really good team that has a good chance to go on and win the conference here. But it doesn't seem like the Washington Capitals of the last 6-7 years where they were, they had the big offense and that they only knew how to play one way. I think they've taken a big step forward as an organization here, and I think Barry Trotz has a lot to do with that. I don't know if you sense the same thing, Robin, but Ovechkin just seems like he's a guy who's kind of, at a certain point, got tired of just trying to do things his own way all the time and bought into what this coach sold and was a different Ovechkin this year.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, we use the term often, and it's a cliche now, but the buy-in, I see this team competing and doing what needs to be done as opposed to what's easier and more fun and maybe more glamorous to do. Everybody wants to score goals. Ovechkin still had no problem with that. But there's more purpose there. And you know what? In the context of Washington, when you're up in a series, you want to wrap it up. But that was a great seventh game. That's not, you know, bigger picture. You want to say they choked a bit. Well, I'm not big on that. But that was a great way for the series to end. And they got beat by a guy who's absolutely astounding when it matters most, Henrik Lundqvist.
Well, Lundqvist, Holpe, I'm not sure pick your poison on either one of them right now.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see what kind of contract Braden Holtby gets from the Washington Capitals. I think he's going to get close to a Corey Crawford-type deal.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any doubt that he's their goaltender of the future and that he's the guy that they're going to have back there for a long time. So, yeah, he'll get good money and he'll get good term and he'll get everything that he's got coming. And he's earned it. I mean, this is sort of the time where he's really, truly established himself as a top-end starter. And, you know, he went toe-to-toe with one of the best in the game, and really there wasn't a lot between them. I mean, interesting in both Eastern Conference series, really. You had a guy, not an up-and-comer, Bishop's not an up-and-comer, he's a really good goaltender, but you had two of the best goalies on the planet, and Carey Price and Henrik Lundqvist, going up against the other team's guy, and really... it was a draw. If Bishop, you could say won the duel between the two of them. So both series really were really close between all four of the goaltenders, and there wasn't a lot between them. And so here you have a guy who's, you know, going to get paid and went toe to toe with as good a goalie as there is. And you're right, Jason. There wasn't a lot between the two of them.
So when we look ahead, Ryan, Rangers, Lightning, where's the separation there, if you see any at all? There's not much daylight between these teams either.
Yeah, no, I agree. I tend to think, and again, you kind of get stuck between what you picked at the start of the playoffs versus things change and develop and teams play differently and your opinion maybe changes on them a little bit. So, I mean, I thought the Rangers were going to come out of the East at the beginning of the playoffs, but when they hit the playoffs, don't forget, they had Rick Nash scoring at a real good pace and lots of offense to match. And so now here they are heading into a series against a team that's got probably the best line in hockey right now, maybe outside of the Getzlaf Perry line, in Johnson and Kucherov.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that going for them, plus Stamkos coming alive, plus a goaltender who's playing fantastic, and a defensive core that's much improved. And there's not a lot that the Tampa Bay Lightning can't do. So it's tough not to pick them in that series, especially when the Rangers aren't getting the offense that they need. I mean, they struggled offensively through that series. So it's hard. I'm still going to go with the Rangers because that's who I started with at the beginning of the playoffs. But I think Tampa is they've gotten through reasonably healthy. Not sure what the situation will be with Callahan, but I think Bishop just went toe-to-toe with Carey Price and did just fine. Wasn't intimidated.
Yeah, I didn't think Bishop played very well, though. To be honest, and the Rangers, I look at their overall team right now. I think they're better than Tampa Bay. Honestly, Tampa Bay has played great for me. They struggled a little bit in the first round against Detroit, a team I didn't think was that good when I compare the top teams in the East. And I really think the Rangers, now Washington pushed them to the brink. I don't know if fatigue's a factor or not. I think with the LA Kings proved it last year, that's not a big deal. But I like the Rangers' overall discipline in their game, and I'm not sure Tampa Bay necessarily can match the heaviness of some of their forwards.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but the Rangers just don't have a lot of offense being produced. I mean, they don't have anybody, and you could say, well, they're doing it by committee, but depth in scoring can kind of disappear as time goes on. I mean, you can only expect so much from certain guys. I mean, you know, Chris Kreider's playing really well right now. Derek Brassard's got 5 goals, but I mean, their leading point getter in the postseason is a couple guys with 8 points. Rick Nash has 2 goals in 12 games. Like, I think Tampa has the advantage offensively. I think the Rangers have the advantage in net and a better decor. But I think the advantage is a significant one offensively for the Lightning.
Well, it's only an advantage, Ryan, if the puck goes in the net. And that's where Lundqvist, you can't just say edge in goal. I think they can win every game in that series if they have to. I'm not saying you want to, but they can win 2-1. I don't know if the Bolts can.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, for sure, that's fair. I mean, the Rangers' defense has been their strength, and their goaltending has been their strength all along, and they say that's what wins you championships. So you've got a Tampa team that rolls into the series with some guys producing big time, but they've been producing all year long, so it's not like it's a surprise. Stamkos is coming on, but I don't think he's hit his full level yet. So we'll see. We'll see if goaltending and defense can thwart a powerful offense. I think that Tampa's not a very big team either. Like the Rangers don't play overly physical either. So certainly it's not like either one of them's coming up against a team like Anaheim. So from a physical standpoint, I don't see a huge advantage either way.
The Canadian team, as we go to the World Championships on hockey, pretty dominating win again. They've scored 58 goals, which I think the most they've scored in the tournament since 1962.
A little ridiculous.
Yeah, and you could tell they were there to play. You saw their celebrations. Like the last few games, they'd score a goal, and it was almost like, okay, we're playing against men's league guys, so no celebrating. But today, it's it's win and you're in, lose and you go home, and you could clearly see they were more into it. Clearly, they're the favorite heading into the finals, I think, right now, the final four. What do you make of, I'm not sure if you saw, Jordan Eberle is making some comments about Todd McClellan and what he feels like. Him and Hall, I've never heard them ever say once, well, geez, I don't think he's a good coach. So
yeah.
I don't take much into what players say about a coach, because I would never expect them to say on record that they didn't like him.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not going to take that like they're both campaigning for Todd McClellan to be their head coach or anything like that. I wouldn't take anything they say. They're both going to be respectful and complimentary. Honestly, what I take from this whole thing with what Todd McClellan is doing, like Mike Babcock, Jason, you and I have had the discussion before about how much credit does Mike Babcock get for taking a super powerful Olympic team and leading them to a gold medal, right? And where does the credit lie? How many other coaches could have just gone and done that same thing? Well, here's Todd McClellan with a very powerful Team Canada. They're not entirely unflawed. Like the blue line is probably, it's still the best in the tournament, but it's, if anything, that's the area of weakness for them. But McClellan is taking a collection of very high-end personalities, very high-end talents, and he's found a way to get them to come together, and really there haven't been much in the way of cracks in the armor. He's showing the ability to do similarly what Mike Babcock was doing with the Olympic team. And that's happening to involve a couple of Oilers in Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle. They're getting some experience with him. They're understanding the way he handles players. He's managing Sidney Crosby at the same time as well. So the credit that we want to give Mike Babcock for the job that he did at the Olympics, Todd McClellan is starting to head down that same path and show an ability to do something similar. They haven't won yet, and we'll see. The next 2 games, we'll see. But I think in terms of Todd's ability to handle the big personalities and make a group come together, it's looking to me like he's kind of showing that same ability that Babcock has shown in a couple of Olympics.
Yeah, agreed. You know, and both those guys have had tremendous players to work with. You know, it just seems to me, even if you've got a tremendous team, you may still win in spite of yourself. But the way Canada's playing, it doesn't look like that. You know, talent isn't overcoming a lousy game plan. They got a good game plan. They've got good talent. The people seem to be in the right places, and it so happens that a guy the team has been over to talk to also has the eyes and ears of two of the big players here in Hall and Eberle, and they seem very happy.
Yeah, and their play shows it. I mean, they're playing extremely well. Now, having Sidney Crosby skating around out there with you. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Taylor's been good from the beginning of the tournament on. Jordan's been good from the beginning of the tournament on. So I think this is just nothing but fantastic for these two Oilers that are over there doing that, and really for Lander and for Oscar Klefbom as well. It's a fantastic experience. But I think going there and playing exceptionally well on the world stage on a Team Canada this good,
mm-hmm.
like those Oilers are standing out on an exceptional edition of Team Canada. Like, I don't know, guys, this is it just me, or is this edition of Team Canada would have had a legitimate medal shot at the Olympics last year? I mean, like, they're that good, the collection of guys they've got together over there. They would have been able to compete mm-hmm. in a best-on-best tournament almost. That's the caliber of players they have over there. And Hall and Eberle are shining among all of those players. Like, this can only mean really good things for their confidence, for heading into next season, their drive. I think it's been an excellent offseason for them in that way. And if McClellan ends up being the familiar face behind the bench, then that's just another added bonus to it all.
It seems more and more a lot of people are believing that McClellan's going to be that guy automatically for the Edmonton Oilers. And I'm curious, we can always play the what-if hypothetical situation with him. And with Chiarelli, who's the GM, so regardless of who the coach is, what do you think he does with Justin Schultz? Like, does he give him a one-year deal and say, okay, you know what, I'll see for myself what he has? Do you think he trades him? What do you think happens to Justin Schultz?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And quite frankly, I think it's one of the tougher decisions that Chiarelli has to come in and make because, you know, here's Schultz in need of a contract. Chiarelli has, I'm sure, a knowledge of him, but a passing knowledge of him. So he's really going on the word of, you know, what pro scouts and what McTavish and Todd Nelson and everybody have to say about this guy. So you've got an important decision to make on him. I can't see them extending any sort of long-term offer to Justin Schultz at all because I don't think he's earned the kind of money that he'll want on a long-term deal. I do see it being a one-year deal at just kind of a show-us kind of a deal, a show-me kind of deal. And I think that, I mean, Schultz's camp probably won't be thrilled with it, but at the same time, sometimes with organizations, this is just the way it goes between players and organizations, and there isn't always an easy fit. Guys, I think we're going to see Oscar Klefbom get a big extension. I think that's where we're going to see some money be spent this summer.
Like Roman Josi?
Yeah, I think Oscar Klefbom's going to get a 4-5-6-year deal in the range of $4 million plus.
Already, eh? Seen enough.
Well, I think that there are forces within management who firmly believe that's what should happen. Now, they may not necessarily be in charge and calling the shots anymore, but if you look at where Klefbom is at and the
Have you watched his play in the World Championships? He's been outstanding.
He's been spectacular. And playing on the right side, he's been spectacular. So, and then if you look at the way he developed towards the end of this season, if you look at where all the arrows are pointing, they're pointing straight up. And so I could see Oscar Klefbom getting a significant extension this summer. And I could see that being where the Oilers are willing to spend their money. Now, Justin Schultz, I think it'll be more of a show us contract. And if you show us, then we'll pay you kind of a deal. Almost similar to what happened with Jeff Petrie. People are going to cringe at that. Who, by the way, I don't know if anybody watched Jeff Petrie's performance in that elimination game the other night. He was awful.
Got like, walked.
Brutal. And I'm not saying he's not a good defenseman and the Orlogosphere is going to climb all over me for saying that, but the fundamental problem with Jeff Petrie came back and bit the Montreal Canadiens when it mattered the most, and that's a 2-on-2. He's fishing for the puck instead of dropping a shoulder into somebody, and that's always been my issue with Petrie. It's always been my issue with the way he goes at the game. and it cost them dearly in that game on a number of occasions. It doesn't even cross his mind to play physically. He's fishing for pucks, and against the best players in the world, they absolutely outclass and exploit him, and wasn't good enough. So, sorry, I just had to... I thought about that the other day, and I just needed to make that point that, I mean, it's the very thing. What people want to go hand him $5 million a year, $4.5 million a year. You know, you got to be careful with guys that with guys whose dimension isn't really clear.
Yeah, I'm a huge Klefbom fan. I have been. I was at the end of last season when people were all in love with Marty Marincin in 2014. I was like, I'll take Klefbom all day long. Bigger, stronger, and the one thing about
Oscar, they handled him well.
Yeah,
like they developed him properly.
Sure, but he's just bigger and stronger. You could have left Marincin in the minors for a full other season. He's not going to be 220 pounds, and he's never going to play with the same intensity of Oscar Klefbom, even if you left him another year in June in the minors. I think that was my issue more so. And the other thing is with Klefbom, I think his offensive potential is grossly overlooked.
I think so, because I think at the NHL level, he keeps it pretty simple. Like, he shoots the puck whenever he gets the chance, and he's got a great shot. He loves to unload that thing, and that is a great trait. But other than that, offensively, he keeps it pretty simple at the NHL level. He generated more points in the American League. I think he probably plays a little looser down there. But what he's doing is he's establishing himself as a very good defensive defenseman with some two-way potential at the NHL level. And then as he gets more comfortable, I think we'll see some of that come out. I don't know how much potential there is. I see him as a second-unit power play guy potentially. I don't think he's ever going to lead your defense in scoring. But I do think he's not just a defensive defenseman. He's a two-way defenseman. He's a really good puck mover. He's becoming a better defender all the time. And the offense is the question mark. But even if the offense never really comes, there's still lots of game there that warrant him being paid like a top four defenseman. And I think the Oilers probably will sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think he can be a 35-point guy with some power play time. I love his shot. It's interesting about Klefbom. I think it's early to offer that, but that doesn't mean you don't like the player, but we tend to rush here. Chiarelli, though, I mean, how long a look does he need to get at him? But like, he's got to make his mind up on all the guys, good and bad, or put a lot of faith in what other people say, and videotape, of course. But there's still questions there. He needs at least one more guy, unless you're just pulling somebody up from the farm. Can Nikitin bounce back? Is Klefbom ready for heavy minutes? What about Schultz? There's still a lot of questions there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that he will... See, he can't afford to just say, well, I'm going to take a good long look next season and see him decide for myself. He doesn't have that luxury, because if they don't improve, they could very well be out of it again by, you know, the middle of November. Like, they're that bad on the back end. So he needs to make some tough decisions this summer. He can't take a look-see and then decide. He didn't have the benefit of being hired with 2 months left in the regular season and a chance to follow the team everywhere and learn everything he needs to know and then hit the ground running in the off season. He's going to have to gather that intel and make those decisions without being able to see a lot of play. Now, I don't think he's going to do anything drastic with any of the core players until he gets a better look. The real organizational shifting that might need to be done, he's not going to do any of that sight unseen, but I could see him making a call on Klefbom. I could see him making a call on Schultz. Even potentially Yakupov, I could see them making some sort of a call on him too if the opportunity comes up. But the main pieces that they're going to build around moving forward, I think he'll want to take his time and get a look at. So Schultz, I think you'll probably see a short-term deal and a contract that says, show us what you think you're capable of. I think they're going to have to add the, no question about it, they can't start the year with the defense that they've got in front of them, or they're going to hamstring themselves from having any kind of chance at all. So I think they're going to see defensive improvements. You have to. He can't take a wait-and-see approach on that.
Not at all. And I think when I go to Klefbom is, you know, he didn't get any power play time. He had the same amount of points five-on-five as guys like Ryan McDonough, Johnny Boychuk. Within a point of Boychuk playing 15 fewer games, I think Klefbom is a young guy. I really see him as somebody who could emerge as an easy 35-point defenseman, moves the puck very well, and will eventually emerge on your second power play unit. It's got a heavier shot than people think, and that's where You know, I think Klefbom, there's a lot of signs pointing up for him. He has a lot of the attributes I think the Oilers desperately lack, and that's why I'd have no problem. If the Oilers could sign Oscar Klefbom at $4 million for 6 years, people would be doing cartwheels because they'd be talking the same way they do about the Roman Josi contract.
Well, and that Roman Josi contract, I mean, it's a value contract. It's one of the better deals out there, and the minutes that he plays, and now you could say, well, he plays with Shea Weber, and that's going to help anybody else. That's true, for sure. But the fact is, he can play those minutes, he can play them well, and they've got a real good defense. So, yeah, that's a deal. It's similar to, there's a few guys out there, like who's Suter's partner again in Mini? Is it Brodin?
Yeah.
There are these guys out there. I mean, the Anaheim Ducks have some very good young defensemen who, if you can get ahead of the curve with these guys. The problem is if you do a 2-year deal with Klefbom, how good is he going to be in 2 years? And then what are those unrestricted years going to cost you to buy off of him? Way, way, way more. So if you can show him the money now, the faith in him, you risk maybe that you're overpaying him if he doesn't develop properly, but you gotta take some chances. And if you can get him a 5 or 6 year deal and you're buying a couple years of unrestricted free agency off of him at $4 million instead of 6, well, now that's a good contract. So I would be in favor of them trying to get something done longer term with him, and I think they're going to.
Shocker, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, guys.